All right. Thanks, Tim. Good morning. I'm Joe Schneider, one of the members of the Word and Life Steering Committee. And I want to welcome you to week two of our four-week series with Dr. Dave Rico, entitled When Love Meets Fear. We're working with Dave's recently revised book by the same name. Today, our focus will be on chapters two, How Fear Shows Up, and chapter three, Confronting the Void. Dr. David Rico is a psychotherapist, teacher, workshop leader, writer who lives in Santa Barbara and San Francisco, California. He combines Jungian, poetic, and mythic perspectives in his work with the intention of integrating the psychological and the spiritual. His books and workshops include Attention to Buddhist and Christian Spiritual Practices. Dave has been a great friend and presenter at Word and Life for 17 years now. So last week, Dave graced us with his morning prayer, and we'd like to start with that today. If you have the book and want to follow along, it's at the end of the preface on page Roman numeral 10. I say yes to everything that happens to me today as an opportunity to show love and let go of fear. I am thankful for the enduring capacity to love that has come to me from the Sacred Heart of the universe. May everything that happens to me today open my heart more and more. May all that I think, say, feel, do, and am express loving kindness toward myself, those close to me, and all beings. May fearless love be my life purpose, my bliss, my destiny, the richest grace I can receive or give. And may I always be especially compassionate toward people who are lost in fear or afraid to love. Amen. As is our custom at Word and Life, we bless Dave as he is about to bless us. So please switch to gallery view and join in the blessing. The words will be in the chat.
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Joe. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
And thank you, Joe, and Tim, and Judy, and Dennis, who is helping us put the film together. When you just sang the word share, it reminded me that I want to be here as one who shares. Instead of thinking of me as, you know, teacher, I'm the teacher, you're the students, it would be good for us to think of ourselves as sharing with one another about how to work with fear. And when Joe started off the morning prayer with the words, I say yes to everything that happens to me today as an opportunity to show love and let go of fear. That yes that you start off with is freedom from fear. Because fear is avoiding what will happen, and letting go of fear is welcoming what happens as an opportunity, not just a happening, it's a chance to let go of some fear and let in more love. And I'm really a believer in this, and I hope it comes through for you too. So I'd like to begin with sharing the screen, and we're going to look. Oh, by the way, this is the teacher of the course. Our book, When Love Meets Fear, the revised edition. But if you have the old one, that's fine. what I'm doing is bringing in what I consider one or two important points, and then opening up our discussion when we have our breakout rooms. So I'm not summarizing what's in here. So I really recommend reading along. And then when I do make my presentation, it'll make a lot of sense to you. And you'll have kind of a richer background for the material. So, can everybody see this? And we like to take turns reading. So we're gonna start here. So the particular topic I'd like to go to today is how sometimes fear is a recall of some trauma that you went through, either in early life or in recent life. And of course, it's called post-traumatic stress. So let's begin. Jane Fehrenbacher, would you read our first paragraph? Hi, Jane.
Fear is sometimes a flashback. The terror or panic we are feeling is familiar, though we may not recall what happened to trigger it. For instance, you fear being rejected, but you can tell you fear it more than fits the present circumstance. That fear may hearken back to a serious abandonment, abuse, or disappointment that happened to you long ago. Maybe even by now, forgotten.
Okay, thank you. Anne Symington.
Just one paragraph?
Yeah.
Okay, it was a trauma, the Greek word for wound. A trauma is a painful event that is now recorded in the cells of our bodies. Any trigger can activate the original stress hormones we felt in the past. This is because trauma leads to enduring abnormalities in the endocrine, autonomic, and central nervous systems. Our bodies were permanently affected, put on red alert, poised for inevitable danger.
Okay, so thank you. So let me just comment here. So it's not your fault when you feel fear that's associated with some traumatic event, because the original event, the original, the time you were first scared, automatically changes how your body functions. You will have, in all of us, have enduring abnormalities. So this isn't that there's something wrong with your mind as being able to see what's really going on. It's that your mind just can't see what's really going on in the present, because there's an endocrine, autonomic, and central nervous system deficit that happened because of the trauma. So this helps us let go of the sense of shame about it. And when we say our bodies were permanently affected, we're poised for an inevitable danger, even though there's no actual danger facing us. But we're just, it's just happening automatically. Okay, so I'm going to open it up for questions after we read a few more things. M. Fagan.
Marcia.
What is your first name? Is it Mary?
Marcia.
Marcia, hi. Go ahead.
Thank you. Likewise, fear and memory are linked in the amygdala and hippocampus parts of our brain's limbic system. Since in the amygdala, the fear circuitry in the brain has no sense of linear time, it reacts in the present as if the past trauma were happening right now, Thus, the past feels like the present. Yes, our bodies are ancient archives that look like today's newspaper. When this happens, our higher brain functions go offline. We literally can't think logically. Our IQ goes down 50 points.
At least.
Wow.
So you don't want to blame yourself when you made big mistakes during a time of being triggered. And then you regret the mistakes you made and you think, how could I have been that stupid? That's not you being stupid. That is what happens automatically. And it goes all the way back to our cave people times. In order to get away from that saber-toothed tiger, our forefathers and mothers had to shut down their thinking processes so that all the energy could go into flight, fight, or freeze. So you want to let go of blaming yourself. Oh, why didn't I think of that then? There was no way to think of it then. See how all of this is helping us be more compassionate toward ourselves? Just this understanding of how fear fits with trauma. Something happened that scared us, and it's still able to scare us the same way it did before. And we just have no control over how it happens, but we do have resources that we can call upon, and that's what we're learning in our course. All right, Carl.
Thanks. Traumatic experiences come from a time when we were unable to defend ourselves, so we feel powerless in the post-traumatic stressed moment, and that adds an element of shame to the event of panic, trauma, that is happening to us. We are not really powerless now, but we can't help feeling that we are.
Okay, Seth, would you unmute?
Yes. Another feature of fear and trauma has to do with ownership. Who is the real owner of the fear we are feeling? A consequence of some childhoods is that we wind up carrying our mother's fear or our father's fear. Their fears were so drummed into us that now we can't tell which fear is really our own and which is theirs. Their past dictates our present. For example, we might carry a fear of scarcity if our parents experienced trauma from the Great Depression. A historical fear then came into our bodies genetically, but not appropriately since the Depression was over by the time we got here. Yet we felt its impact on our parents. Their fears of scarcity were smuggled into us, so we felt them then and we feel them now. We might even have passed them on to our own children. The dreadful has already happened. Martin Heidegger.
Heidegger. Thank you, Seth. So let's take a quick look here. When trauma happened, we were unable to defend ourselves, trauma in childhood, and so we felt powerless, and we feel powerless again now, not because we really are powerless, but because we're feeling as we felt as a child. Or another way of saying it is, the past has become the present. Then we want to ask ourselves this important question. How many of the fears that I'm carrying around are my own, or how many belong to my parents? I like to use a simple example. I was watching an episode on MASH once, and for those who don't know this, MASH is a situation comedy in which there are doctors who are working on wounded soldiers during the Korean War. And in this scene, the doctor asks the nurse about the patient on the gurney, what is his problem? And the nurse said, he has a compound fracture, which means a compound fracture is one in which the bone is protruding through the skin, as opposed to simple fracture in which the bone is broken, but it stayed inside. Anyway, he didn't quite trust her diagnosis, so he lifted the sheet and looked and said, no, this is not a compound fracture. This is the bone of another soldier. It was shot off of him and went into the leg of this guy. So he's actually holding somebody else's bone that we're going to have to extract. What a perfect metaphor for exactly what happened to many of us. And my own parents were certainly affected by the Depression. There was always that sense of scarcity, worry, can't even save money because the banks might fail. Even though Eisenhower was president, in our house, it was Herbert Hoover who was in the Oval Office and may still be in it for some of us. So let's open it up for questions about any of this. And you're not going to relate to all of it, but if there's any part of it that you don't quite get and would like to ask about.
Hi, may I raise my hand?
Yes, Anne.
You may. I also wanted to mention, Dave, if you want to stop sharing screen just for a moment so we can see everybody to raise their hands and things like that, we'll do that.
Yeah, no problem.
Hi. Boy, I am so grateful this morning. I have been struggling with things that it was like bingo. My mother in particular had fears about money. All the things you mentioned, her parents went through, she was born in 1929. And, you know, I've never connected those dots nor understood how they might affect me, although I have been aware of her fears. Okay, but I didn't know. Although I now, when you read this morning, I thought I have some of those fears, like I'll never have enough or it might run out. Oh, I'm so grateful. So I don't really have a question at this point, but I wanted to just say thank you. Yeah, I almost want to cry.
I get it. Was that Seth or?
I was just curious if there's a different approach, if you realize the fear maybe isn't something that happened to you, it was something that happened to one of your parents, is there a different way to handle it, or is there just you do the same thing either way?
You want to identify it? Oh, this is the same way the doctor did in the example I gave. You're gonna pull the sheet back and look and say, wait a minute, is this from me or did this happen? Is this within me or is this happening to me? Whose fear am I carrying with me? What was smuggled into me? And let me distinguish it. So if you can first try to understand it that way, and then the actual work is proceed as if that were not the case. So in what Anne brought up, I'm going to act as if there was abundance rather than scarcity. So two parts, one, you're identifying how it's connected to the past. And secondly, you are no longer at the mercy of it because you're acting as if it could not stop or drive you. You know what we talked about last time? Does this make sense? Or you had more of a question?
I think that makes sense. So once you identify and you, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to make, I'll just listen to everyone else. I'm sure it will come together for me.
Okay. Well, you come back and ask again if you think of something else. Because what we're looking at is how much of what goes on in me is from me, and how much have I taken on from other people. It doesn't even have to be parents, could be anybody, that I now carry around as if it were entirely mine. Jadzia, is that how you pronounce it? We can't hear you.
How do you, can you hear me? Yaja.
Jadzia.
Yaja. Yaja. It, you know, thinking about the Great Depression, or in my case, it, my parents' trauma was around war, around World War II. That seems like such a widespread cultural, like, artifact that's, it's not just personal, it's also very sort of culturally present. I just wonder what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, it's almost as if it's kind of epigenetic, which means you not only inherit characteristics from your own immediate family, but you're taking on, in this topic, traumas from that whole generation and generations before. This would certainly apply to descendants of people who were in the Holocaust, where you would still carry around so many fears. Think of yourself as in danger. It helps us be more gentle with ourselves for all the fears that we have. See, some of the fears are our own, and others are from our parents, and others are village fears. For instance, the fear that people don't like us, that we've been rejected, abandoned, that's more of a village fear. That comes from the part of you that was in a village, and in order to survive, you had to be accepted by everyone else so that you could be part of the mutual helping system. And if they rejected you, if they ejected you from the tribe, you would not be able to survive. So we're carrying around those kinds of primitive fears. That's why our work is so much bigger than just ourselves.
I'm on the phone and I have a question.
Okay, and what is your first name?
My name is Susan.
Hi.
Hi, I'm trying to understand, I understand how we can carry over medical conditions through genetics and whatnot. I'm trying to understand the emotional carryover of fear, how it's scientifically based. I mean, we don't carry cells, or do we, that are enclosed with some kind of trauma or fear from the past?
I don't have scientific knowledge about it. It's just something that I have experienced and have seen clients experience and read about. It seems as if...
I'm sorry, you've seen what?
It seems as if there's a genetic inheritance that comes to us over the generations. And it's more anecdotal information. I don't know if they've really come up with a scientific explanation. If anybody else know about this?
I know a very little bit about it. It is what you were referring to is epigenetics.
Yeah.
And that would be a good thing for someone who knows. And I'm going to look it up again because I don't know everything, but I've read enough to know that this is something that has been proven. And I can't tell you. I mean, I've read that DNA has changed from this trauma. So it's got to be generational, and it's got to be something that really gets stuck in the body. And probably in the reptilian brain.
Yeah, in other words, in the more primitive parts of our brain. Okay, Turiya?
Yes, I think epigenetics is the name of it. And if Susan, you want more information, the internet is full of it. But one of the most interesting studies I know about is done with mice. And mice were exposed to cherry blossoms and the fragrance of cherry blossoms at the same time they were given an electric shock. 3 generations later, when their children and grandchildren were exposed to those same cherry blossoms without the shock, their system still responded as though they were going to be shocked. The fear was there. So there's very interesting stuff out there, and well researched.
Actually, all this was a way of helping us, putting us on red alert. The fact that it could be passed on to us is, let's say somehow we inherited a fear of standing at the edge of a cliff. No one taught us to have that fear, but all prior generations get a little bit of trepidation when they get too close to the edge of a cliff. It's nature's way of warning us about falling. Certainly, we've inherited that from many generations past. We didn't just think of it on our own. Anyway, other questions about this? Okay, Becca?
I'd like to add about the word epigenetics. In my studies as a vegan, someone who does not eat animal products, I've learned that through epigenetics, we can change our DNA, meaning that if our parents and or grandparents and ancestors, even beyond them, if they had an illness such as diabetes, we are not cursed to have that disease also, or illness, we can change our health and our risk of getting it with lifestyle and particularly diet.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And I wanted to add one more thing about being able to detect other people's energy. I'm learning that I'm an empath, meaning that I'm able to absorb other people's energy as well. There are different types of qualities that empaths have. And I'm learning that in order for me to not absorb the energy of other people, because I'm an empath, I need to do a certain exercise to ground myself in order to shield myself from picking up on other people's energies.
That's a very good point. We're very liable to take on other people's trauma. Mm-hmm. I remember once my parents separated when I was 2, so then I never saw my father or my father's parents. But one day I was talking to my stepmother, my father's third wife, and she told me things about my father and grandfather And every single quality that she described was true of me, even though I had no contact with them whatsoever. I mean, it was like scary when she told me about them. I thought, wow, that's totally me. So we are inheritors, and our topic today is how we inherit fears. That will be our topic in our breakout. But before we go there, any other questions or ideas that you wanted to share? I wanted to remind us of the quote by German philosopher Heidegger, "The dreadful has already happened, and you've already survived it." We have to keep telling ourselves that. It already happened, and I've already survived. And what I'm getting now are these pinpoint recollections and these triggers that harken back to something that was dreadful before, but now I can handle, because even though it looks like it's as big as it ever was, it isn't really, because the me that's experiencing it in the present has hundreds of more resources than I had in childhood. So we want to keep reminding ourselves of that. It's a way of building your self-esteem also. Anybody else have something to share? All right, well, why don't we go ahead with our breakout rooms now, and we're going to be it'll be for 20 minutes. We're going to have about 4 per room, and it'll be on this topic of what fears have I inherited that it's time for me to let go of. Okay. Anybody would like to share something that came up in your group, or any questions?
Okay, I see Shana.
Thank you, Tim. So, Dave, it's amazing to me that it took my whole life till about a year ago to realize how deeply impacted I was, my whole family is Jewish, by the Holocaust. All of a sudden I went, oh my God, this has had a huge impact in so, so many ways. And not to diss any therapist, but missed by every therapist. So I thank you so much for just bringing that to light. And as an example, of course, there's many, many, many historical things. And now we're looking at reparations for African Americans whose family members were slaves, like, and people saying, oh, why would we do that? I don't know. So there's so many, so many group traumas, group cultural traumas that are huge. Mm. And just seeing it is hugely helpful. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a collective trauma. Thank you, Shana. Somebody else have a comment?
Yeah, go ahead and unmute, Turiya.
Thank you. What I would just like to hear from you, Dave, is more about, because this came up in our group, an insight for me, like if I live in self-hatred, then of course I will be afraid of myself. And so it seems like that's the place to start.
Mm.
I'd love to know what you might have to say about that.
That's a very good point. I've noticed that also in myself and in others. Many of us have a fear of really knowing ourselves all the way to the bottom. I remember I've just been in a class on Macbeth, and one of the things Macbeth said as he was about to engage in his lineup of murders, he said, "I don't want to know my mind anymore." And he's saying that because he doesn't want the knowing of what he's really like to interfere with his plan. And I said to myself, oh yeah, that's happened to me. I didn't do the terrible things he did. But I could tell that in the course of life, I've been trying not to know something. And gradually, your nose gets rubbed in it and you just have to know because somebody points it out, or you can't deny it any further. And I'm just wondering if other people have had that experience where you just are afraid of, yeah, knowing yourself fully. And when I say knowing yourself, it's like also knowing your shadow side. It's not about knowing about your personality. It's recognizing that some of what you most dislike in other people is also true of you. We're not used to full knowing of ourselves.
What can I say? My appreciation for this class and your approach, because I have lived in denial of my fear. I mean, I grew up in pretty terrorizing circumstances, and I coped by denying it all, dissociating mostly. But you and your approach, your compassion and warmth, and bringing this to a community where we can see each other and ourselves, like, fear is normal. I don't have to deny my fear. I can actually develop a compassionate relationship with my fear. And you just brought so much hope to me with this class and this book. Thank you.
Thank you. And of course, she's reminding us of this, one of the major areas of denial of knowing ourselves, which is addiction. Like, it takes a long time to get it. Hey, I'm actually an alcoholic. I'm not just someone who enjoys alcohol. It's crossed the line. It's now an addiction. I can't help myself. Can I let myself know that? And it won't be just a matter of getting yourself to know it. Other people help you know it. They point it out. And then a grace comes to you that says, I also am going to need help from a power that's bigger than my ego. My ego is preventing me from knowing myself fully. Now I need to surrender my ego so grace can enter my life and move me toward a program that will help me change. So that would be an example of a major area where you don't want to know yourself. Okay, anybody else?
Dave, I was just going to say, before you jump to another question, would you be willing to say more about, you know, other examples of shadows besides just addiction that we come to know?
Yeah, let's use the three poisons of enlightenment from Buddhism: greed, hate, and ignorance. Like, do I really know how ungenerous I am? Do I really get it that greed is operative in my life? Do I really get it that I'm divisive, that I'm holding on to old prejudices? By the way, that's another thing we inherit, prejudices. That's the poison of hatred. And the poison of illusion or ignorance. Am I keeping myself in the dark about so many things, because if I were to know them, I don't trust that I'd be able to handle it. It's all of our fears are about, ultimately about doubting that we'll be able to handle what we have to face.
That's well said, thank you. Who else? Michelle?
People told you all your life that you're incapable of handling things, that you need, that you're always going to need other people to tell you the way to go, then and to do it for you, you'll never get the chance to grow up fully. Michelle, was that your hand up?
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
In our discussion of fear, I realized that I am, my ego is strongly attached to the belief in my inadequacy and in my unworthiness and in my incapacity and in my powerlessness. And I have hurt myself repeatedly and others throughout my life through this absolute attachment to inadequacy and my refusal to face my fear of my own power and goodness and what I have to offer. So when I am repeatedly asked to be someone and stand up and offer what I have to offer, I most frequently flee, because I, like Jonah and the whale, I'm beginning to realize how selfish that is, how self-centered that is. Just a comment, I'm really struggling with that at 70 years of age.
Well, first of all, thank you for being so candid. And I know that many of the rest of us are right there with you. So don't think of yourself as a weirdo.
Thank you, because I carry so much shame over this as well.
Yeah. No, we all have those feelings. And it's always the same response. I'm going to act as if I were adequate. I'm going to step up to the plate as if I were capable of handling this. Just think of it that way and go ahead with it. And gradually, you'll notice that you're not hit as hard by that sense of inadequacy, because mm-hmm. the evidence is showing that you are doing your best and you are being effective in making even a small change. It's going to make a big difference. And by the way, Michelle reminded me, we could also not want to know about good things about ourselves. We could also be hiding certain talents. You know, the Bible says, don't hide your light under a bushel. So we could be doing that too, not just the negative, but the positive. Will I get to the end of my life and know myself? What a question to ask. And I'm reminded of a quote by John Ruskin. We will never know the whole of something, W-H-O-L-E. We will never know the whole of something. But if we keep looking, we will see more. Isn't that a beautiful, hopeful statement? So you're never going to see your full self with all your fears and all your loves, all your goodness and all your badness, all your adequacy and all your inadequacy. You're never going to see the whole thing. But if you do keep looking, you will see more. That's success. I'm seeing more about who I am. I'm seeing more about where fears are lodged in my body. and how I can act as if they no longer could stop or drive me. That's success, not no fear. That won't happen, nor should it. Yarko, hi.
Hi, I'd like to add on what you just said a little bit. In our breakout room, I was talking about continuous improvement as a way of looking at things as an engineer, and that's what you just described. And I know also in tech conferences, I've talked about problem solving and the continuum between knowing truth and being disconnected from truth in the psychological sense, being psychotic. And I always present it as a continuum. We never know the real truth. Our senses interpret the world outside of us, but other animals see senses we don't. But if we're close enough, it allows our survival. And that's the whole point of continually looking to see a little more, because that's the nature of survival and that's the nature of life.
Yeah, you're making a good point that all we have are approximations, especially right. In religion. I mean, how could you know who God is? You just have an approximation of something about God, but we never see the whole of anything. But if we keep looking, we see more. And that will be true in so many areas. Like, will I ever really know how my mother loved or didn't love me? Will I ever know if my mother actually loved me as I now understand love? I asked my brother and sister. They don't know either. It was very mysterious. Some people know right away. Other people have doubts. And all you can do is keep looking and not blaming. Jody?
Hi, David.
Hi, nice
really,
to see you.
Really good to see you and fabulous work. A lot's happened and I've been on a big inner awakening journey the last 7 months. And what I want to say is that, wow, some things are really hitting here and then I'm kind of tying them together, and it kind of brings up questions. I've been looking at being unseen, and some work that I've done, deep inner work that I've done brought me to this, some things, the fear of not being seen is a big one, you know, not being seen in general, and how that keeps me little, how that, you know, pushes me to try to be seen maybe in unhealthy ways, you know, like pushing to educate or teach people or help people, whatever. I see it coming up. But then when you brought up with this other person, refused to face my own power, I thought, whoa, I think there's a relationship here. And I know that there's a mass, I have a lot of fear. I thought it was around maybe lack and scarcity, but now that I'm really, and I am doing a lot of searching, but I'm kind of beginning to wonder, like, what is that? You know, to face your own power. And I have a feeling that it has something to do with this being unseen, not having a voice, being afraid to speak up, be who I am, having a lot of fears around boundaries in a lifetime. You know, I do come from abuse, but that's not the point. I mean, and hearing you say about this neuro, you know, the neurological is very deep, you know, but I've, throughout my life, because I've known you for a really long time, I've done a lot of work, followed you. I thought I was really understanding a lot of things, but it didn't take until 7 months ago, coming out of an abusive relationship, I can just say that, to have a massive ego, like you were saying, like, okay, now you're going to be forced to do this work. I gave into it. It took a long time in my life. And now when I hear things and learn things, it is so much different, you know, because I'm having a greater awareness of me and that shadow and what I do and my behaviors. But it does bring me to this, like, how that fear of your own power and being unseen. I'm just curious if you have any thoughts about that, like that relationship and how to sort of move through that and heal that, because I think there's something there.
Yes, it's a central fear. I know that was a lot. The fear of knowing, Jody's bringing up an important point, that we will also fear our own power. So you fear knowing yourself and you fear knowing the extent of your agency. You're reminding me of a poem by Emily Dickinson. So I'll recite it and then I'll explain. We never know how high we are till we are asked to rise. And then if we be true to plan, our stature touch the skies. The heroism we recite would be a common thing did not ourselves the cubits warp for fear to be a king. That's our fear. We're afraid of the full power, power of the king. And so we deny how big we are, we warp our size, and just never stretch out into our full power. What is this full power? It's the power to love, it's the power to let go of fear, it's the power to believe in yourself, it's the power to let go of shame, it's the power to relate to other people in ways that are really effective. It's the power to recognize the wisdom that we have and the graces we've received. There's something about us that keeps denying that. Why? It's a mystery. Why would we deny something so wonderful? But yet it certainly seems to happen.
Well, David, I just wanted to say that in some of the work that I've done, I know that that power has always been there. I know that all of me has always been there. I also, and I've, because I've come to understand this, but I know that things got in the way, trauma, of course, on many levels, got in the way. And so now from some of this that I've been doing, I'm relearning, going back. I'm not saying it was never there. I know it was there. But it's really huge to see what's transpired and throughout a lifetime, but that's gotten in the way from kind of remembering that, from feeling it to embodying that and allowing littleness, and I mean littleness like the fears, to run a bigger show instead of that bigness and fullness to run my show. And it's like, wow, having to step away from and out of that littleness, the fear running to what's possible. And since I didn't get that growing up, it's like I'm having to learn that now. I kind of figure it out as an adult. And I guess it's just, you know, having some guidance with that is, you know, helpful, because sometimes it goes away really easily and back to old.
Okay. Well, thank you. Just keep thinking of yourself as standing in front of Glinda and she's saying to you,
yes,
you've had the power all along.
Yes. Yes, I think about that often, actually.
Okay, Joe or Kathy? I think you're on mute, Kathy.
All right, can you hear me now? Okay.
Yeah.
I've been reading a book right now called The Goldfinch. And in listening to everybody, yesterday I read a quote in the book. We are so accustomed to disguise ourselves to others that in the end, we become disguised to ourselves. Mm. And I want to tell you who that quote's from, but I can hardly pronounce his name. Say, can you, Joe?
Francois de la Woof.
Yarko, you can pronounce that name, can't you? That's the author you like also.
I'm not recognizing him right now.
Okay, but anyway, I know who you mean. And that's a wonderful quote.
The other thing I wanted to say is that we're so afraid of our weaknesses that people will see our weaknesses. But, you know, we do a tremendous value to people when we admit that we aren't all powerful, and because then they believe in themselves more because they know their own weaknesses. And so, you know, shouldn't feel like we have to be perfect all the time.
Yeah. Part of that, we have to know all the answers. So we're noticing in all this being said, the role of humility. When you humbly acknowledge your whatever inadequacies you have and let that be okay. I don't know that, but I'll try to find out about it. Needs to feel totally okay with you. And the humility is another way of letting go of the fear that I have to look like I know it all, have it all, am it all. All right, well, thank you all for your attention, and we're going to pick it up again next week, and appreciate all your sharing.
Yeah, Joe, would you like to close us out?
Well, thank you, Dave. And as we've come to expect from your presentations, this one too has been both fascinating and liberating. We'll continue next Thursday morning with moving on with Chapter 4, Relationship Fears, and Chapter 5, Becoming More Courageous. Also, check out Dave's website at daverico.com. It's a real treasure chest. And a reminder that these sessions are recorded and are available on our webpage, wordandlife.us. Okay, Judith?
All right, everybody. Big smile. Everybody's full of power, full of grace, full of wisdom. All right, we'll see you next week at 10 o'clock. Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, David. Thanks, everyone.
Yep. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you, Dave.
We'll see y'all soon.
Okay. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Judy. Thanks,
Joe. Good work, everyone.
Thanks again. Yeah, Tim, thanks, thank Sarah. You. See you next week, everybody. Adios.
See you soon.